So yeah, it's a public call. So just remember to stay off names and places. And I am all ears and happy to help.
Understood. Sounds good.
All right. I guess should I read my the question I sent in the email?
Or, it was kind of bare bones, so I don't know that reading it will do much good. If you just want to tell me, we can take it from there.
Okay. Could we get more into why my question's bare bones? Is it too vague, or is it just not specific enough?
So, So what you gave me was, I would like to talk to go deep into the subject of excuses and justifications and how they've been supporting my hedonism. If there's time, I also want to understand why I choose most of the time not to think when it comes to these problems, justifications, excuses, and hedonism. So it's fairly general. That could apply to work, could apply to family, could apply to love of parenting or these sorts of things. So if you could give me a bit more specifics about what the issues or challenges are, it would probably help to zero in.
Right. Okay. I definitely want to talk about my personal life. I would say to get more specific, I suppose present problems it's not a challenge objectively, but for personally, it's a challenge for me to get a job. And so I guess I can start. I'd like to start there.
Okay, sounds good. How old are you, and what's going on in your life work-wise?
So I'm 30 years old, and work-wise, I have worked for other people like once or twice, but majority of my work experience is through my father's restaurant. I'm not sure where to go from there.
Sure. Okay. And what's your education?
I have a high school level education. Technically, I actually dropped out of high school, but then I finished it later on.
Okay.
But that's, yeah.
And what do you do in your father's restaurant?
What I did was, in the beginning, I was a cashier, and then my father kind of put upon me more of his own responsibilities. So over time, it became like a head cashier, because all the other cashiers would come to me for questions, guidance, and problems. Then usually I would go to my father if I need to, or I would resolve them. But towards the end, I felt as though I was like an assistant manager, because I was doing like bookkeeping, office work, maybe not bookkeeping, actually office work, like sales and things like that. At least inputting it into we had a more older system from like the early 2000s. So I felt, even though it wasn't like my father's like, here's the responsibilities, you're now our assistant manager. It's like I was that position, but I wasn't, because of work politics. My father didn't give me that position, even though I was doing all the responsibilities. Of course, I didn't have any authorities like to fire people. That in particular was not provided to me, or even implied.
Okay, got it. And how long did you work there?
Well, it's kind of tough. I usually say from 18 to 27. But I did work when I was younger. Like, I would work summers. So, like, I guess I could say 16, but I felt like adding that in. So, I'm sorry, I didn't do the math. That would be 9 years.
Okay.
To go by 18
and
years old.
And was that not something that you wanted to maybe make a career out of, was in the restaurant business?
No, I didn't want to at all.
And why is that? I mean, that's where your experience is. And it's not good or bad. I'm just curious, why not?
Part of it was, now that I think about it, well, now I'm thinking about it a bit more. Part of it was growing up, I disliked how my father ran his restaurant. So I was like, no, I'm not going to get into that. And then the other reason is like, I've had this persistent desire to do something meaningful and impact. You know, for, I guess in the beginning, it was kind of like for for like, I guess my country culture, but as an adult, it was more like, oh, I want to do something good for, I feel like it sounds cheesy, but like for the good of humanity. So that was kind of where I'm like being a restaurant owner and putting the time into that. It felt also empty and sad to me, the idea that I would do that.
And is your father empty and sad in your view?
Yes.
Okay. And when it comes to doing good for humanity, which of course is a noble ideal, what has been happening with that?
Very little. I think part of a contribution was committing more of my free time to like learning philosophy. I think that was part of it. Beforehand, I was really into engineering. I still am, like it's an interest of mine. But to me, that's where I thought I would like kind of serve the benefit of humanity. I really wanted to get into aerospace, in particular stuff relating to, space and in orbit, things like that. That's clear enough. That's the little I've kind of contributed towards that goal.
Sorry, I didn't quite follow that. What do you mean the little you've contributed towards that goal? I'm not disagreeing with you. I just didn't quite follow.
You're right. That's not a contribution. I would say that's the progress I've made towards that goal. The little progress I've made.
And sorry, what was the progress?
Well, discovering that, you know, the value of philosophy, and particularly, your brand of philosophy. And, I've stuck with it. I've listened to a lot of, podcasts. I've also like thought a lot about different kind of philosophical concepts, and I think a lot more about like a free society and how like DROs and such, and how could that be implemented sooner than through the natural progression of if more of the population is peacefully parented naturally, you'll have less there'll be less influence. The government will be reduced by the natural consequences of children who are peacefully parented.
Okay, and what have you been doing in the couple of years since you quit your father's restaurant?
At least half of it, I would say, like, I've filled it with distractions, and I use my distractions more as, like, a means to cope. And then the other part would be some with philosophy, the other part with, why do I have this issue? Why do I need to cope so much? And then also doing chores for family members. And
I'm sorry, you said, why do you need to, and I didn't catch that word. Why do you need to something so much?
Oh, why do I need to cope so much? Does that make sense?
I'm not sure quite what cope means in this context. Sorry if I'm missing something.
No, not to worry. I think I'm referring to it in particular in the psychological framework of like coping in terms of a means to handle particular negative emotions. At least in my case, they're negative emotions that are persistent, and they're overwhelming or just very very distracting. Does that help or clarify?
A little bit. So, in the last couple of years, you haven't worked. What have you been living on?
Initially, it was savings, and then I would do like chores and favors for family members. And so instead of like, because some of the chores, you know, they would actually need to pay a professional. And so I would ask, instead of like they pay me for it, I would ask if they can just loan me money. And so I have a decent standing with these different family members. So I just borrowed money from them, and I live on a very like lean budget. Live in my grandmother's house, but like I just sleep on her couch, and so that's how I've managed. Oh, and I have my father's restaurant. He closed it and then moved locations, and now it's a seasonal thing it's open seasonally instead of open year round. And so last year, I worked for two of the seasons where his restaurant was open, and so I made some money there too.
How much are you in debt?
I'm About $10,000.
Yeah. Okay, got it. And have you? What's your dating life like?
I don't have a dating life.
Okay, have no you dating. Ever had a dating life?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about that.
Oh, just before that, could you clarify by dating life?
I don't, going out with girls, having a girlfriend, pursuing girls, women, and so on.
Okay. I ended my dating life, or at least I put it on pause. I didn't end, that sounds dramatic. I paused on my dating life after I broke up with my first girlfriend. I broke up with her, I think it was 23. It was 2018, so 23, yeah.
And holy crap, it's like 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So you haven't dated in 7 years?
That's correct.
So you're a porn addict?
I was, yeah.
Okay. And when did you not?
Oh, when did I not?
Yeah. Like, when did you stop using that?
Oh, pornography?
Yeah.
I would say in the last, about 2 months ago, I would say, I since then, it's been like resolved. I feel pretty pleased about that, actually. Yeah.
And what was your relationship like at 23?
My with my girlfriend?
Yes, with your girlfriend.
Sorry. My relationship with my girlfriend, I thought it was pretty good. Especially that for me, that was like pre-philosophy. Like, it lasted 3 years. Let's see. It did end with her breaking up with me. Let me think about what else. I would say that it did make it, the thing that I learned, one of the things I learned from that relationship at the time is I realized, I started to realize that I had I remember now. I knew I had some like kind of psychological problems. Like I was more anxious I realized I was very anxious, and just kind of other dysfunctions. And so that after that relationship, I realized clearly I was like, I have a psychological problem, and I need to figure out how to solve it, because it's not something I can just kind of shove to the side, avoid, ignore, or just manage with it. Not only do I need to understand and solve it, but I should do that. And that was an insight I gained from that. And that's why I made the decisions. Like, until I have a better handle or have these psychological problems resolved, I'm not going to pursue dating.
And is it anxiety or something else that is the major issue you want to resolve?
Oh, it was you mean in this call or back then?
Back then.
Back then, I need one of them, which was anxiety. But I mean, some of the other major ones were like I had a couple addictions. They weren't drug related, which I feel pretty lucky that I didn't go down that path. But I was, of course, addicted to porn, and then I was addicted to watching TV series. Like I would binge watch and badly sleep deprive myself. There was one more kind of addictive relationship I had. No, I guess. Oh, it was video games as well. I was really into strategy games. So sometimes my justification is like, oh no, I gotta finish this entire strategy out. And so suddenly 8 hours has passed. Huh. Most of the night is gone.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then the last one I want to mention from back then was I started realizing how people were exploiting me. And who was exploiting me. And so that was the other thing where I was reluctant to make new friends and date another girl because I had low self-esteem. And at the time, I didn't know how or why I was being exploited. I mean, how or why I would meet people, become friends with them, and then they eventually would turn into one-sided relationship where I wasn't contributing my needs. I'll phrase it that way. Or in other situations, the person was exploiting me where they were like, oh, come on, like guilt trip me. Come on, let's go do this. And I don't want to do said thing they really want me to do. And so it would just turn into this thing where, oh, I'm going here now to see, to hang out with this friend. It just seemed as though like I lacked that, as they say, that locus of control over my time. And that was like a big thing. And those are kind of the ones that I think are relevant to mention. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple more, but
one of the addictions was drug related. I'm not sure what that means.
No, I said, fortunately, they were not drug related.
Oh, no, sorry. Okay, got it.
Because I did drink and smoke weed, but I had very like strict restrictions. And so I never had an addiction issue. It was interesting how that worked out. But I didn't have an addiction problem with weed or alcohol.
Okay, got it. And what happened in your teenage years that you had to finish high school later?
I'm not sure where to begin. Do you have any suggestions?
I don't. It's your life. I don't know what, I mean, did you drop out? Like, what caused you to drop out? What was going on beforehand? It's a bit of an unusual situation. If you were kicked out of house and living on the streets, whatever, I can understand that. But I'm just not sure what happened in your teenage years that had you finish high school later.
I see. I'll start. So it occurred my senior year. I'll start with my senior year, my last year of high school. In my last year of high school, the first semester was for the most part was okay. And when I started having what led to me leaving school started at the very end of the semester. It was about December of it would be December of 2013, because I would have graduated in 2014. So it was in December. I remember feeling intense anxiety, and I couldn't understand why. And I remember I started talking. I would go visit my father at his restaurant, and talk to him. And I remember he would leave me hanging in the employee seating area, because it's a bit private where the employees we can sit and have lunch. So I'd be hanging out there waiting. And I remember he would just have long conversations with his customers, and I just like sitting there. And it's not like I'd be sitting there for 15 minutes. I'd sit there for an hour. And I did that a couple of times. And I remember, I think it was like the fourth or fifth time I did that, I was just pissed. I was just like, I'm not coming back. Fuck this. And so I left, but I still didn't have my anxiety resolved. And so even back then, I had my porn addiction. I had my addiction to games, and when it came to TV series, that wasn't really a thing. That wasn't really bothering me. I didn't have that kind of temptation or pull. But so then I got I wouldn't say my porn addiction got worse, but my video game addiction did get worse, and so that's how I managed my anxiety. But then I got more tired, and also, what made my anxiety worse, I did figure this part out, which was when I used to, in high school, I was a cross-country runner. Was far state. I was the top athlete. And so that was my senior year, was it was the end of my cross-country career, as far as I thought it probably would have if I went to college. But one of the things that really is it upsetting? I mean, it did upset me. I'm trying to think of more specific emotions. Oh, I felt betrayed by my teammates, they started treating me instead of like I had some tension with some teammates for different reasons, and so suddenly all that tension and frustration towards me just melted away. It was gone for some reason. And I didn't think much about it. I just went along. I was kind of happy. It's like, oh, now they're going to, my teammates are more inviting to me. They even sometimes offer if I want to hang out with them or do kind of group activities outside of cross country. And so I find out at the end when we were in our final competition, and it was at the, it wasn't in the county level, it was in the state level. We got like in our division, I think second or third. One of the teammates is like, oh, great, now I don't have to pretend to like you anymore. He says kind of sarcastically. And that's when I looked at him and I was like, wait a minute. Like, and so I realized that my teammates were just kind of, they were being friendly and nice to me so that I would compete well, so that then maybe we could place first place. Because like I mentioned, I was one of the top athletes. By then, I was kind of more second, third, but I was pretty important. I was a pretty important piece of the team, because with those competitions, at least back then in 2013, with cross country and scoring, is you go by placement. And so since I was fast, I would place higher, you know, like maybe top 20 or top 30. And so it's all about every teammate needs to place higher. And so then your total score is the lowest, and the lowest total score gets first place. And so that team goes to nationals. That was, does that make sense? The team placement stuff?
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure of that. All right. That was the value that I could contribute. And so they treated me kind of, I felt like as though with like kid gloves. And that was, and in particular, it upset, it was like, it made me angry, because my like motivation, my reason for like joining a sports team was to spend time with people. I had before that lived a very like isolated life. I was ostracized by the majority of my classmates. At least I felt ostracized. I was ostracized. I didn't have many friends. So when I started running and I did very well, I could be a part of these group activities, and I felt a little bit better about like myself and in general in life. And so I stuck with it and ran well. And so when I started having these disagreements on the varsity side of the team, eventually I got to varsity, and then there was a lot of tension there, and people disliked me. I wouldn't be surprised, maybe sometimes for good reasons, you know. Even now, I'm not that great of a communicator. Back then, I was worse. So I bet it was difficult to, I bet I was not very approachable, or at least I was awkward. And I can sympathize, especially now that some people would be annoyed to interact with me. And then also, I'm a top athlete, so it's kind of like, oh, I got to talk to this guy, even though it's complicated and difficult. So that tension in the varsity team and the discontent it made this whole experience from why I was running less valuable, and it affected my performance, because I felt almost like listless and really wondering like, why am I even running? Like, it's like, it was kind of like the I heard this expression from me, you know, you can, it has to do with milking cows. You can milk a cow for the sake of its milk, or you can, I'm messing up, but do you know what I'm talking about?
The quote doesn't ring to mind, but go on.
Oh, okay. I can re-explain. There was a podcast where you shared an insight about how there's kind of two ways to approach a job. You can either approach a job because you you're passionate about the job, or you can do it for the means, which would be the pay. And that's kind of with the milking of the cow. You use that as an analogy. You don't milk the cow for the sake of milking it. You milk the cow for the sake of the milk. That is
okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I was running for the sake of the social connection, and I felt I was doing my bargain, and then the social connection, so to speak, dried up. And so I was just like, what am I doing here? Like, I'd rather learn tennis. For some reason, that had been an interest of me that never got fulfilled growing up. Neither of my parents were like, oh yeah, I remember you talking, still being interested
in
tennis.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you remember what my question was?
I don't. I'm
okay,
sorry.
So you gotta not do that. You gotta not just go on a ramble, right? Like just talk and talk and talk, right? Because it's supposed to be a conversation. You're asking me for help. So I'm asking you for questions for a specific reason. And if you end up just ignoring my question and talking about whatever you want to talk about, then we really can't have a conversation. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just sort of trying to tell you how I can help you the most, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Okay. My question was, why did you drop out of high school?
Okay. So the reason I was mentioning cross country is because that gave me status and made me feel I was no longer ostracized by my classmates. And the reason I'm mentioning that is when that ended and I felt betrayed, what happened was I failed a couple classes. I failed one class. It was two classes. Yeah. At the end of my first semester. And so I couldn't participate in the other sport I would do, which was track
but
and
sorry,
field.
Was it because you were not doing the work? You were not going to sleep at the right time? I mean, why did you fail the courses?
I didn't do the homework, so I didn't understand the material, so I failed the test. And one of my classes, turns out the teacher, the way he organized the grading, he made the final test the most important. So since I failed it, I got 59% or something like that. So I just failed that class. And usually I'm a B student in terms of grading. And then my ceramics class, I was really pissed with the teacher. And so she, I think she just kind of took vengeance on me
I didn't finish. You failed ceramics?
Yes. Yes, I do.
That's not the easiest thing in the world, is it? I mean, it seems like a bit of an easier course.
Yeah. What happened was towards the end of the first semester, I started skipping school, and so that's how it affected my ceramics, because I wasn't able to be there on the right day to put my what I had made into
hang on,
the kiln.
Hang on, sorry.
And so I couldn't finish.
What do you mean?
It.
You say you weren't able to? What do you mean?
So there are specific days when there is a day where you can put.
No, I understand. I understand how ceramics work. I understand. So I'm just trying to understand, A, you said you skipped school, and B, you said you weren't able to be there. But if you're not able to be there, let's say you were in hospital or, I don't know, really sick or something, then you would get a note from the doctor or from your parents or something like that, and you'd be able to retake it. So I'm just trying to understand the difference between you decided to skip school and you weren't able to be there. Because if you weren't able to be there, wouldn't you be able to do the work some other way?
Yeah, you're right. So I chose to, and since I was skipping school without a valid excuse, like, you know, some medical note or something.
So you just decided to stop going to high school.
Yes.
Okay. And did your parents know about that?
Well,
I'm sure they did.
They didn't know about that.
No,
they didn't.
I mean, I don't know how it happened, you know, 12 years ago or whatever, or 13 years ago. The parents get informed if you don't show up, right? You get these, I mean, more recently, a friend of mine was saying that you get automated calls, right? A member of your household was missing from a collect. It's all automated. Maybe it wasn't automated, but parents know, right? I mean, when I was a kid, if you didn't go to school, your parents would get a call.
Yeah. Okay, then you're right. Yeah, my father did know. My mother didn't.
Okay, so I'm finding this conversation very confusing because I don't know whether you're saying.
You're right,
no, stop interrupting when I'm talking. I mean, you've listened to these calls before, right? So when I'm talking, you need to listen.
Yes, sir.
So I'm a little confused because you keep saying stuff and then contradicting yourself the next sentence. Like, I couldn't get to school. I chose not to get to school. No, my parents didn't know. Oh, my father didn't know. So it's a bit dizzying, if that makes sense.
That does. Yeah.
And I also feel like if I don't double check every statement, I don't know what's real or what's not, if that makes sense.
That's understandable. Yeah.
So just help me understand what's going on. Well, with you saying stuff and then contradict, like just these two examples in like the last 1 minute, right? You said, I couldn't get to school. And then it turns out you chose not to go to school. Those are two very different things, right? And then I asked if your parents know, and they said, no, they don't know. And then I said, but doesn't the call? Oh, yeah, my father knew. And if your father knew, then your mother knew.
Right. So,
What am I asking?
So what you're asking is if I'm aware of or an explanation of why I'm contradicting myself.
Well, that you're not telling me the truth. And these are just a few things I've caught because they're obvious contradictions. And what it does is it makes me sort of look at the conversation as a whole and say, I don't know what's true now. Because, you know, things you've just told that are just, I mean, I'm not calling you some big stinky liar, right? But you lie.
Maybe.
Hang on. It's not a maybe. You said you couldn't make it to do your ceramics. And then I probed that, you said, oh, no, I just chose not to go.
Well, you didn't probe it as in like you investigated more. And then I was like, oh, fine. You know, you're right. I could have gone. It was more like, oh, you have a good point. It wasn't when you explained what the meaning of wouldn't and how it means in that context. It's like, oh, then that's not that, you know, like
couldn't
it was a choice.
Hang on. Couldn't and wouldn't are not the same thing, right?
Yes, they're not the same thing.
Right? If I decide not to take a flight, that's different than if I'm unable to make the flight for some reason. I'm kidnapped or whatever, I break my leg, right? So those two things are very different. And when I say, I ask, did your parents know that you were skipping school? And you said they didn't know. And then I have to say, well, doesn't the school for? Oh, yes, no, they knew.
Right. And so with that example, I made a mistake because when you mentioned the calling and I was thinking about it, then I remembered that my father would call me and just get angry and yell at me and then hang out. He was like, you should be going to school, blah, blah, blah. Do I have to come? Because we lived in separate places. He had an apartment and a house. And so I lived in the house. He lived in the apartment. So he called me. He said, do I have to come over there? It's like a 15-minute drive. That was just, I made a mistake.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you mean when you said, and I'm not trying to nitpick, I'm just trying to understand what you mean when you say, I made a mistake. So I said, did your parents know? And you said, no, they didn't know. But you clearly remember your father yelling at you for not going to school, which means that you knew that they knew.
No, I remembered after you mentioned about how they do call, I thought about it a bit more, and that's when I realized I had made a mistake. I was like, yeah.
Okay, so then you said that your father knew, but your mother didn't.
Yes, so my parents are divorced.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, my mother had moved. She had most of my life lived in the same town as my father, and then at 16, she moved out of state, and it was far enough out of state that there was a time zone difference, and and so I don't think I provided to the school my mother's new phone number, so there was no way for them to get my there was no way for them to contact my mother.
Oh, you couldn't.
They couldn't. And I didn't provide it anyways. It was kind of option, just provide a guardian's phone number, so I just provided my father's.
Okay, got it. I understand. Okay. So if you say, Steph, the reason that I didn't graduate is I decided to stop going to school. That doesn't really answer the question that much.
Yeah, I wasn't done.
Okay, the thing. So we have 2 hours, right?
Yes.
And we've been talking for 40 minutes or so, maybe 35, 38 minutes, all right?
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm trying to help you with your life. And so far, I've spent 20 minutes trying to figure out why you left high school.
Right.
So I'm not sure what to do about that. I'm trying not to be rude and interrupt you, but I have no idea how I'm going to help you if it's 20 minutes and I still don't know why you left high school.
Right. I think I know how I can wrap it up in about 30 seconds because
Okay, would so do that. Do that going forward, please.
Yeah, I was about to mention that. You know, to make a commitment to be more concise.
Well, you're not concise at all, but I appreciate the distinction. Okay, so why did you leave high school?
The anxiety that I felt, it just grew more and more, and I started skipping school more and more, and so I didn't have the credits to pass. And so then I...
So you were too anxious to go.
Yeah. The part I wanted to mention, which I had talked about the whole kind of cross-country thing and running, is it gave me this normal status. But then, and so I felt as though I would go back to how things were before I became a runner, and where I would be ostracized and ignored. And in my mind, my justification is I can't bear to have that experience where no one talks to me anymore and no one looks at me, no one cares. And that was the bit that really put my anxiety, increased my anxiety so much that it wasn't like I'm skipping school like maybe other week. It became weekly to daily, like right. In short succession.
Okay, so your father obviously knew that you weren't going to school.
Yes, he did.
And what did he do or say?
What did he do? From what I remember, it was just kind of calls, sometimes calls. Sometimes he would pass by the restaurant. It was just like kind of frustration and annoyance. Like, just go, you just like, it's not that big of a deal. I think that's chastising, right?
I don't know exactly how to phrase that. So he would just say, to just get your ass to school kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's but of course, like, he didn't ask why you weren't going or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm sorry about that. And do you have any siblings?
I only have half siblings. I have a sister on my mom's side who's 6 years younger than me. And then my father remarried. I believe it's 18 years difference. Another one's 16, something like that. It's a huge gap.
Okay. I mean, so you had some, I mean, you were kind of like an only child, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, your half-sister on your mom's side doesn't, if she's in another state, right, that doesn't do a huge amount for you, right?
Oh, well, at that point, well, I grew up with her. It's just only half of the time because I spent half of my time with my mother, the other half with my father. So I did grow up with her. So I kind of had like, a taste of what a sibling is like, but there was this, I don't really have a comparison, but I don't think I got the whole experience. But when I talk to friends that have siblings, there's certain things I can relate to and other things I don't. And I think that has to do with the fact that my mother was always with, my sister, sorry, was always with my mother because her father was not in her life. And then with me, I had a schedule that was established my mother and my father divorced, and so I would be spending half the week with one parent, and then of course the other half with the other parent.
Okay, got it. Okay, so you started working. Was it 17 to 27? Was your parents' restaurant, your father's restaurant?
I usually just say 18 because okay. That's when I had a set schedule. Yeah.
Okay, got it. All right. And your relationship, you were dating, you said 3 years, so it's 20 to 23. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And why did she break up with you?
Why did she break up with me? Would you say this is a long distance relationship? She lived in another country, but we made, like, we both made enough money to visit each other, and so we would visit the maximum amount of time that our visas would allow. Would that be considered a long-distance relationship?
So how many months a year would you be visiting each other?
It would be a total of 6 months, but it would be in 3 months apart. I mean, 3 months apiece.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you would go and visit each other, and would you live with each other, or where would you stay?
Yeah, so I would. She would stay with me, and then I would stay wherever she was living.
And you don't tell me your country, but what country was she living in?
She was living in Sweden.
In Sweden, okay, got it. And you met online?
No. We met, she was visiting there I live in, and I met her then.
Okay, got it.
In person, sorry.
Okay. And so you obviously, I mean, it's long distance, but that's long distance with a lot of contact. You're seeing each other twice a year, 3 months at a time, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And were you aiming towards marriage or something like that? What was the purpose or goal of the relationship as a whole?
So let me think about what was my purpose at the time. Because in the beginning, there wasn't a purpose. I was raised. Like marriage was not viewed positively, as well as having kids. Even in your 20s, was viewed negatively. My father said, "You should have your kids in your 30s and such." That was his opinion. So for me, I had this goal because I felt I needed to prove myself to be like a kind of like a normal person. It's like I need to have a girlfriend, therefore then that makes me a normal person. And so I was I was looking around for a match not to date but to have a girlfriend. And so that was the goal in the beginning. Just to have this relationship and have it and I cared about honesty back then, so I wanted to make sure that I could be honest with my girlfriend, and so with the girl that became my girlfriend, since when I would like hang out with her, I could be more and more honest about my thoughts and feelings. It helped me choose if I wanted her to be my girlfriend or not. Now I will say that part of why I chose it to begin with was more for lust reasons. So like I slept with her and then I would still spend time with her and occasionally sleep with her. But over time I was like, oh, I really do like her. So then I asked her to be my girlfriend. And
slept together when she was visiting your region.
Yeah.
And how long after you met did you sleep together?
About a month. I got to know her for about a month.
Okay. And then you became her boyfriend later.
About 2 months. So she was there for the summer. And so I was like, well, isn't there just, at the time, I think it was, well, isn't this kind of this summer fling thing? And so I went with that. And then after it was over, she went back to her country. I happened to be actually visiting Europe. Like I planned it with my friend almost, I think it was 6 or 9 months beforehand. So it was a coincidence. I even going to Sweden as my first destination, it was all a coincidence. And so after she had left, she had gone home and I continued talking to her. I arranged to meet up with her when I would arrive in Sweden. And the first day I was there, I asked her to be my girlfriend and that's how it started.
And I'm sorry to be annoying, but I'm guessing you don't remember my original question.
You're right. I don't remember your original question.
Why did she break up with you?
Sorry, I almost interrupted you. I mean, I did.
Why did she break up with you?
Right.
I mean, if you don't know, that's fine. I just, usually people will say something, right?
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I have some theories, but I don't. She was something like a year and a half younger than me.
Okay, got it. All right, so you met her, you were 20, she was like 18 and a half.
I was 19 at the time.
I was 17 and a half.
And she was actually 17 and a half, yeah.
And so she said, I don't want to date you anymore, but she didn't say why.
That's a good point. Yeah, actually, no, she didn't. She just said, you know, you're a great guy. I just don't love you anymore. I don't think she phrased it that bluntly, but that was kind of the meaning behind it.
And like, did you want to continue the relationship?
I was feeling as though like I was thinking of breaking up with her as well. Like that, I had those thoughts and I was debating about it. But since we had planned to visit, I felt as though I wanted to. If I was to break up with her, I would do it in person than over the phone. I felt as though like, you know, at that point in the relationship, at least before things before things were going downhill. So like about 9 months before that, I was thinking about maybe I will marry her and have kids with her. And I was thinking about that commitment and I felt pretty good about that. I felt compelled to do that, but it was, I never like talked to her about it, but I remember thinking a lot about it. I would or wouldn't. And then I guess now that I think about it, we had some conflicts like between family members and they didn't get resolved well. And so it kind of felt as though that affected the relationship, which led to me wanting to break up with her, but then she broke up with me first. Is that clear? Or
sorry, is that between your family members and her family members?
It was her family members. I was having issues with her family members.
Ah, okay, got it. All right, so we have about an hour remaining. How can I best help? I'm sorry. Are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
You heard the question. I'm not sure. I'm never quite sure if we get cut off or cut out.
No, not to worry.
What would be the most successful outcome of the conversation for you? What would make it feel like it had really been worth your while and your time?
I would consider the most successful is having a more clear understanding of excuses and justifications I make for myself, but also I make for others. That's to me the focus. Is that clear? Would you like me to?
Yeah. So explain? Give me an example of how a particular excuse or justification shows up in your life.
Okay. Let's see. I'm still here. I'm just thinking. So an excuse I make excuse I make in which then I stay up later and so I sleep less is like I'll want to watch a TV series and in my mind I have this kind of persistent kind of thought like, let's just watch this, just one episode. And so I'll make the excuse of, well, I guess this sounds more like a justification. I'm just going to go with this anyways. Let's see. So I decide to listen to the thought of, let's just watch one more episode of this TV series. And then I'll go to bed. And then after the episode's over with, and I'm supposed to go to bed, I have this feeling of I know it's negative, but I can't really describe it more specific than that. But that feeling, like it's like heavy, and it makes it difficult for me to kind of relax and go to sleep. It also makes me think of the times when I was a kid. When I would go to bed, crying, and so I would be like, no, I don't want to go to bed yet. And so most of the time, I'll just watch another episode, which leads to another episode. After that point, there have been other times where I'll take a walk instead. But that's the example. Do you have any questions?
Okay, and why do you think you keep watching shows and not going to bed? I mean, assume you're not paying rent at your grandmother's place, right?
No, I'm not.
Right. And who's you're borrowing the money to pay for like food and stuff, or is she feeding you as well?
I borrow the money for food and bills, because I have a couple bills.
Okay, got it. So you have no savings, you're 10 grand in debt, and you have no particular job prospects and no formal education, which is not the end of the world, but you don't also have any lucrative hobbies, like you're really into programming or I don't know, whatever it would be these days that might be something you could make money at. So why do you think you are staying up so late?
This is just a bit difficult. I think I'm like dissatisfied and unhappy with the choices I made. Maybe I feel at night is when I'm most aware of my guilt, the guilt I feel towards the choices I've made. And so I think that's the negative emotions. And so instead of, you know, thinking and understanding those emotions, I choose not to think and, you know, avoid, watch more of the show, my TV shows or whatever distractions, other distractions.
Yeah, I think in general, most people who are underemployed, they stay up late because you don't feel bad about not working at night because most people don't work at night. And you want to erase most of the day. So you want to, you know, you go to bed at 3, maybe you wake up at 11 or whatever. So rather than say 7:30 or 8, because your day's kind of empty and you don't feel as bad doing stuff at night because most people don't work at night. But this way you get to erase most of the day or at least a good chunk of the day by sleeping in and that sort of, does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. I think, I wonder in my situation, and correct me, and I would love to hear your feedback on this. My home environment at my grandmother's house is chaotic. Like my grandmother, it's like I'm always keeping it, I'm always aware where she is in the house. And so there is a sense of sweet relief that I get at night that is also enticing. It's like, oh, like everyone's asleep. I can be left alone. I can relax.
Sorry, what's chaotic about it?
With my grandmother, I'm going to start with my sister. I
just need things to be relatively brief. I can't do the 20-minute answers or we don't get anywhere.
Right. So my sister is quite, it's pretty unstable. And the way she goes by controlling everyone in the house is she kind of threatens to escalate and she'll yell and things like that. Like she can get intense. And so when she seems to be appeased and her choice, like she drinks and I'm not sure she still smokes a lot of weed, but she used to. So when she seems to be just kind of, what's it called? Dissociated. That's kind of when it's easier to deal with her. So that's one person. My grandmother, she's quite immature. So she gets frustrated, and annoyed and gets passive aggressive when things are not cleaned or kept up to her standards of cleanliness. And then I'm not the only person that there's two other people, my mother and then my great uncle. So it would be my grandmother's brother. With my mother, she's checked out. And so she doesn't care to upset my grandmother, but that's a problem because my grandmother, she escalates in her own way where she's like persistent and she's willing to be like kind of blunt, mean to anybody in the house. And then I don't really need to mention my grand uncle because he just kind of sits on the couch and watches whatever's on the internet. And I guess he's also checked out.
Does anyone here have a job?
My grandmother is retired and she's financially the most successful person. So is my grand uncle. He's retired, but he's pretty much broke. And he is broke. He just has his social security. And then my sister does work and my mother also does work.
Oh, okay. So they have jobs.
They do, yeah.
So
I could have been more concise about that.
Well, so it's not so bad during the day because they're at work, right?
With my...
Sorry, just because you said, I thought you said at night there's this relief, but if they're working during the day, I assume they're day workers, then wouldn't they be gone during the day and there'd be more peace then?
With my sister, it's because my grandmother's always there because she's retired.
I thought that she's not the chaos merchant. Wasn't your sister that way?
My sister my sister is the worst chaos merchant, but my grandmother's second because my grandma has no problem provoking my sister. And that's like, that's a tense situation to diffuse. And frankly, the home environment has gotten a lot more calm, substantially more calmer because I've been there. I'm a cushion and I've kind of smoothed out there. I've made the environment less chaotic. There's less passive aggressive things happening and things like that. And so that's what I'm doing during the day. and cleaning up after people, fulfilling chores that my other family members refuse to do, or they'll make a bigger mess in which they should clean it, but they don't. And so that upsets my grandmother. So instead of her getting upset, I take care of it instead. So maybe that clarifies the chaos of the house in the daytime.
Okay. And have you looked for work at all over the last couple of years?
I have. The farthest I've gone is, I've updated my resume, a couple times, but I never submit it.
Sorry, I'm not quite sure. You're looking for work, but not submitting a resume?
Yeah, that's as far as I get.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand what that means.
So, I have the material to submit an application, but I don't submit the application.
So you're not really looking. So you're not looking for work. Looking for work means submitting an application, doesn't it? I mean, sorry if I'm missing something.
Oh, okay. Then I misunderstood what looking for work means. I haven't been looking for work.
So you thought looking for work was seeing if there's anything available, but not applying for it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a reasonable response? Again, I'm trying to just have a productive conversation, but I say, you're looking for work. You say, yes, I have a resume, but I never submitted anywhere. Does anyone think that's looking for work?
Well, now that you've clarified it, no, that's
not.
No,
but for you.
For me.
Yeah, for you. Do you think it's looking for work to update your resume?
With this feedback, it's
no, no,
it's
for you,
not.
For you, not
that's
my feedback,
saying,
for you.
Well, now that you've clarified that, no, that
no,
isn't
not, not now
forward.
That I've clarified it, for you. Do you think that updating your resume, I don't even know what it means to update your resume if you haven't worked in years. So you have a resume, you don't apply anywhere. So does that mean you're just looking online to see if there are jobs you could apply for and not applying for them?
Yes.
Okay. So how many hours a week do you spend looking for work online or looking to see if there are jobs that you might not apply for?
For example, last week was just 2 hours.
So 2 hours, you do a search, you say, oh, here's some jobs, and then you don't apply.
Yeah, I'll read about the company and see how, with my work experience, if it would be a good fit or not.
And do you think it will be a good fit and don't apply, or do you not find anything that you think would be a good fit?
No, I do find some good fits, yeah.
And then why don't you apply?
Depending on this, it's a bit difficult. Because it's been different things over the last couple of years, but I'll just mention the recent one because that's what's relevant and makes sense. I feel this kind of like this shame for being like 30 and applying for a job that's only like $4 over minimum wage. And so I feel this sense of embarrassment and feel as though, like, when those feelings come up, I think about, like, how people are going to criticize and look down on me. And so I get tangled up in those emotions. Co-workers,
co-workers. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, co-workers, yeah. And so that's, I get tied up in those thoughts.
Maybe
and sometimes it goes on
trap,
for a while.
Maybe it sort of reminds you of the ostracism you experienced as a student in like junior high school and early high school before you became an athlete.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's correct. No, I'm sorry. That's correct.
Okay. All right. So what happens if you're 35 and doing this? Is it better or worse?
Much worse.
Okay, so every day that you don't apply for jobs, the shame is going to get worse, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what's the plan?
I don't really have a plan.
I mean, it's like you're on a boat that's drifting away from shore, and you say, well, it's a long way to swim. But every minute you don't start swimming, it just gets longer, doesn't it?
That's a great analogy for this situation, yeah.
So again, you're an intelligent fellow, right? So help me understand, like, what are your thoughts? I mean, you're intelligent enough to know that, obviously, right? So what's the thought or what's the plan?
The thought and plan was to identify these like emotions and understand them, but also part of what I was I wanted to understand. Sorry to interrupt.
But you've already said that about like you had this anxiety, so you broke up with your Swedish girlfriend, or she broke up with you, and you've been trying to deal with that anxiety, and you haven't dated in 7 years, right? So is that plan working to find a way to deal with the emotions, and then you'll be fine and be able to do stuff? Is that plan working?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
It has been working, yes.
But you haven't dated and you don't have a job. Help me understand from a practical standpoint, not internal, right?
Yeah, from a practical standpoint.
If I've been trying to date for 7 years, sorry, if I've been trying to lose weight for 7 years and I now weigh substantially more, and then I say, but my diet is working, people would have questions, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to the analogy, you know, you have the guy that's losing weight because, you know, he has like he has a goal, while the other guy is like very overweight, and so he's panicked about some bad health event happening, like maybe I don't know, like how, let's just say a heart attack. So like I'm not the guy with the goal. I'm the guy trying to avoid a negative. And so I would consider in that analogy progress if my weight fluctuation is getting less and less. So instead of...
No, but it's not getting less. It's not getting less because now you are 30, you haven't worked in years, and you haven't had a girlfriend in 7 years. So you are losing experience. And you are being run, and I sympathize with this. It's not a criticism, I'm just pointing it out. You're being run by the fears of ostracism and rejection that occurred like 15 years ago. So if your goal is to deal with your emotions, why are you avoiding situations that you know you need to embrace, like getting a job? Because it triggers you from 15 years ago. If you're being triggered from 15 years ago to the point where you can't even apply for a job, how is that productively dealing with your emotions? And again, I say this with sympathy. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah. So there's a piece that I need to bring to attention, which has to do with in the subject of being a perfectionist, as well as fear of failure. And so that has to do with something has to do with my father. And my father is very intense when I would make minor mistakes. Now at the time, I didn't consider it minor mistakes. I thought it was major. You know, especially today, I look back on that. It was pretty cruel what he would do. And so that is more so what's stopping me. It's like, what if I get fired? What if I fail to stick up for myself and I get exploited, like what my father was doing while I was working for him? And so that's kind of more the relevant thing. And it kind of adds to it what you talked about just a moment ago with fear of ostracism. So that just makes it's just another layer onto that cake. And I could add another layer, but it's not that relevant.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Sorry,
it's significant.
You've been working, and sorry, I do have to interrupt you because you can talk, and I want to make sure we get to the meat of the matter because we've only got a little bit of time left. So,
no problem.
Certainly, as far as when you were 23, you said you were working on sort of anxiety and so on. So when did you first start trying to work on your emotions to make them more productive or less intrusive?
So 23, just to be clear, is when I became aware of that, where I was like, oh, this is something that I think is a problem. And it became identified. So when I started working on it was like 25. When I took it serious, it was 27. That's when I made a commitment to learn more of, your brand
of philosophy.
How long
have you been listening? Sorry to interrupt. How long have you been listening to what I do?
I've known about you since I was 25, but I really started listening at 27.
Okay, so 23, you realized you had a big issue with anxiety, although you knew that before because you didn't go to high school because of anxiety, right?
What do you mean by no? Would you clarify that? I'm sorry if that sounds obtuse.
No, it's fine. So you didn't want to go to high school because you were afraid you'd lost status and you were going to be ostracized or rejected or ignored as you were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew that you didn't want to go to high school, because you were anxious about social rejection or ostracism or being ignored. And I'm not saying you knew all of the sort of root causes of it, but you knew that you had an emotional difficulty that was fairly strong so that you couldn't even finish high school, right?
Yeah, I knew it was an emotional difficulty. I didn't peg it as an anxiety. Like I said, roughly when it was 23 is when I was like, oh, I think I have this thing. What I would describe these particular feelings and in these particular circumstances actually as anxiety. Because I viewed it as, it's like, no, I'm not some broken person. I'm not like these some of these other people that they don't have control over their lives. Like, I have problems. It's kind of like that drunk, you know, the caricature of drunk. It's like, I can handle my alcohol, and they're like plastered. You know, that was unfortunately my kind of my perspective on my dysfunctions was, it's not that bad. It's manageable, you know.
Okay, so like 16, 17, you've got this anxiety. 23, you realize it's pretty bad. 25, you start working on it. 27, you start to take it seriously. Is that right?
That's correct. And that would be thanks to you at 25, finding your content and such.
Okay. So let's say half a decade or whatever, right?
That's fine with
me. How would you mark your progress for half a decade of fairly intensive work?
Well, so I need to bring up another thing, and this is pretty heavy, and so I just want to mention this to begin with. Has to do with suicide. I only had thoughts and strong feelings, and but I never went further than that. That's kind of where, when I took it serious, you know, philosophy helped me a lot, and the thing that was really I guess put me in that direction was I believed in family obligations. I felt so obligated to be loyal to my family of origin. And so I addressed that. And so that helped a lot. So that would be around, I can't think of how old I was. No, yeah, it was around, it was 20, 27, 26. And like I had started taking, you know, like, philosophy series, and that's when I ran into the argument about family obligations, and it was a massive relief, as well as one of the podcasts you mentioned, you know, problems caused in isolation do not get resolved in isolation. So part of what helped me with, you know, with suicide is I saw a psychologist as well, and so that I spent some of my savings to get a decent psychologist, and that's something I did. Like I said, around.
Oh, so you went to therapy. Good for you. Good for you. And how long did you go for?
As long as I could afford it. I went with an IFS therapist, and so I paid out of pocket. And so I went, I think it was about 4 months, as far as I could go, as far as my savings.
Oh, so been. That's what you mean, like, I'm not getting worse, right?
Exactly.
Okay, got it. All right.
Yeah, that's been permanently resolved. It's.
Okay. Well, I'm obviously glad to hear that, and good for you for making that decision. That's wise and mature and money well spent.
Agreed.
Okay. So again, I'm sort of just trying to make sure I understand what is the most productive use of our time together still.
How much more time do I have?
Oh, we have another 30, 35 minutes.
All right.
Because you said excuses, right?
Yeah. I was wondering if we can touch on sabotage and how it relates to moral sadism. I happen to think about the whole truth about sadism. I watched it. I listened to it when it first came out, and it came to mind yesterday. And I was thinking about mentioning it if we had time.
It's your call, man. Whatever works best for you.
Would you remind me of the definition you've provided with moral sadism?
I'm afraid I couldn't give anything accurate about a show I did, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. So,
oh, it was 2 years ago.
I did some other stuff longer ago. Even 2 years ago, I tend to live sort of in the moment. So I assume it has to do with using other people's moral standards to control and bully them.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
All right.
I'm one of the things I remember with my father growing up he would mock and belittle me for being an American citizen, and he would kind of attribute, you know, some of the bad things that the American government was doing at the time. You know, this would be during Iraq.
Sorry, what was
such.
His country background?
He's originally from Mexico.
Sydney. Mexico, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so he would mock you for being American when he was Mexican.
Well, ironically, when he became an American citizen, at that time period, he had to actually abandon his Mexican citizenship to be an American citizen. And he had no interest in, because then the laws changed later on, he could have become a dual citizen. And he's like, absolutely not. Like, he has some contempt towards his own home country and their culture.
And is your mother also Mexican?
No, she's American. She's white.
Oh, so you're half Hispanic, or half Mestizo and half white, is that right?
Yeah, but I pass as white. Even my family members, they're like, whoa, you're white. Yeah.
So, right. Okay. Got it. Okay, so moral sadism and sabotage. Sorry, go ahead.
So I remember growing up, my father would kind of be like, look at what your country is doing. And, you know, like some of the quote-unquote Native American genocide stuff, like my father would burden me with that. It's like, oh, you know, your culture did this. And I remember.
Because yeah. God knows the Mexicans were totally peaceful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, exactly. But it's just so funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do get some dark humor from it, especially the last couple of years. Where I'm like, oh, you know, the Aztecs, for example.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, they were like carving out the hearts of 10,000 children. And that was just for religious shit. So, yeah, okay. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. I promise this will be quick. There's even a lesser known tribe that were cannibals. And I forgot what part of Mexico they're from, but there's always this thing with Mexicans. It's like, if you're from that particular state where their ancestors cannibals, they're always like, it feels as though they're more aggressive than they should be. And it's funny considering how things are these days, you know, but it's, I just wanted to add that. You know, speaking of moral failings and things like that. So, So I remember just having a lot of guilt. And I remember when I was 18, I was like, I was burdened with that, you know, the typical leftist propaganda, because I live in one of those left-leaning states.
So your father moved to America from Mexico and then blames you for being American?
I would say he mocks me for it.
Puts you down, insults you, denigrates you.
I
mean, we're talking about moral sadism here, so I assume it's negative.
Yeah, it's a bit more sophisticated. Like, he's like, this is part of your nature, that kind of thing. It's like, this is something that you shouldn't do, and this is why you should be more like a world traveler, and this is why that's
sorry.
Better.
So the genocide of the natives, which wasn't actually a genocide, but the violence between the European settlers and the natives is part of your nature. Is that because you're half white or something like that?
Yeah, that would be because of my mother. Yeah, so that's where
so
I make
he
the
married
connection.
And had children with a woman whose genes carry genocide. Sorry, does he have a fetish for genocide? I don't really understand. Is he turned on by it? It's like genocide plus tits is my go-to zone.
Yeah, you can imagine my father definitely prioritizes values in women. He's not like,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah,
she's hot.
Screwed here. He's a screwed up sadist, right?
Yeah,
and he blames people for their genetics.
Yeah.
Okay. So how can I help with that?
Well, just talking about it, it's helped. I find that trying to convince me that like I have these burdens. I just remember growing up, I felt the typical white guilt. I had
it's out of empathy, right? So he's using it's not like the Mongolians put Genghis Khan on their fucking currency. They have statues to him all over the place. They love that guy.
Right.
And you know, white people have, you know, Christianity plus whatever, right? Tend to have a little bit more empathy on the main or on the average. And that empathy is like, well, don't you feel bad? Like, could you imagine going to some Mongolian guy and saying, well, don't you feel bad that Genghis Khan, like, conquered the city? No, he's a warlord. He's strong. You know, they don't feel bad about it because they don't really empathize with the victims. So it is, in fact, to some degree, a virtues that are being used against you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it's
You know, they the natives should have fought better. They shouldn't have, I said this in Australia, right? They shouldn't have killed off all their smart people or ostracized them. So
I think about
they get
the
conquered,
Japanese.
Right?
Oh, I'm so sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
I think about the Japanese, how they you know, they were pretty behind in the beginning when the Americans came in, and I mean, they caught up and were, competitors towards the Europeans and the Americans.
Yeah, I mean, if the Japanese didn't want to lose the war, they shouldn't have been so unbelievably brutal on their offspring. And if the Chinese didn't want to lose to the British, they shouldn't have had a completely stagnant culture for 6,000 fucking years. You know, there are prices to be paid for the brutality against your own citizens and the standards that everybody seems quite gleeful to uphold. So, yeah, I mean, do better.
Yeah, hear, hear. Agreed.
Okay, so anything else?
All right, that's enough for me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with regards to the excuses, I assume you're keeping your hair.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And how do I know that?
Because people who have their hair, they're able to ignore the passing of time.
Yeah, especially 30, you probably don't look a whole lot different unless you've had some significant weight gain or loss. Or you've been working in the sun, which you haven't. But I assume that at 30, you kind of look similar to 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago.
I'm actually pretty confident when it comes to health. And so I could, without trying, look like I'm 25. And if I put some more effort, you know, exercise, among other things.
Femboy makeup.
I could look even younger, yeah. Or yeah, okay. Makeup. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not really noticing the passage of time. And your body's not creaky yet. I assume if you're health conscious, you exercise and stuff. So your body's not creaky. You're not losing hair. You've got no gray hair yet. Your face isn't particularly aging, particularly if you spend a lot of time indoors, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, so you got a baby face, right? So your body is not noticing the passage of time. Or maybe your body is, but you're not really noticing the passage of time.
I would say, thanks to your show, I'm more aware of it. And so I guess that's giving me more anxiety, but I think that's a good thing.
And you both reject and embrace family obligations.
I used to. I mean, nowadays it's more economic.
I don't care. It's not. The reason that you're able to live rent-free is because it's family.
Yeah. Okay, I see.
Right, so you reject family obligations, yet you also rely on and to some degree exploit family obligations. So I'm not sure what you feel about family obligations, because if you're not obligated to your family, then your family is not obligated to you. Then why are you rent free?
It's because the chores and work I do. So I'm not exploiting my grandmother. But I will say she's giving me favorable returns because I'm her grandson. But also I'm very helpful. Like she's going on a cognitive decline, and so she gets a lot of sense of security, which is why she's less passive aggressive. Because
sorry, what do you mean by sense of security?
So she can come to me for questions, and I give her answers, or I tell her, wait, give me a couple minutes, let me look this up for you, and I can give you a definitive answer.
Okay, so how much time a week are you spending doing that?
Ooh, I mean, that varies. Sometimes.
Okay, it always varies. It always varies. Don't stall. Just give me a rough estimate. Hours, days?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes it's 3 hours a day. Other times it can be up to 7 hours a day if I'm doing garden work with her because she likes doing gardening.
Ah, okay. So you're spending three. So you have a part-time job, sometimes a full-time job, helping out your grandma.
That's correct.
And how much money would you say that you're saving in rent?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. I mean, probably $1,000 a month or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Maybe it's 1,500 because the place where I live, it's more expensive than usual. I mean, than on average. So maybe it's more like 1,500, but let's go with 1,000.
Okay. So you've got a job that saves you $1,000 a month. So you're being really badly paid, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, if you're doing you're getting $10 an hour. Let's say you're doing 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, it's 25 times 4, 100, saving 1,000, right? You're getting paid $10 an hour.
Yeah.
And you're concerned about being only slightly above minimum wage.
Oh, wow.
Well, and she has an
It's your uncle or great uncle or someone like that who's home anyway, right? So he can work on that, right? He can help her with that. So oh, like no, he's not like he's doing anything.
Oh, he's in really poor health. Like he's a couple years older than my grandmother, uh-huh. and their siblings, like he has like swollen feet, for example, among other things. And he's like, I don't want to see a doctor. I don't care. And so, well, he just says, I don't care, but he acts like it.
He's just waiting for death. Okay, got it. He's in the he's in the green room for the coffin. Okay, got it.
Pretty much, yeah. It's yeah.
Okay, so what is your what are your dating plans? I mean, at some point you want to date, I assume, right?
Yeah.
What are your plans?
My thinking, I would make a plan after I got a job. But some of the thoughts I've had about what would my plan be is joining some athletic groups. I have an idea of some places where I can go to where people around my age would hang out. And so just be there in those kind of situations and contexts and strike a conversation. I feel pretty good about the cold approach these days. I mean, sorry, I feel good about, I feel like comfortable and like I can take on those risks and I can do that. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, somewhat. So what is the woman you're looking for? What does she want?
I would say she's looking for someone that isn't contradictory with their values. As well as has the virtues of I would say in this day and age, like honesty, as well as courage, you know, to probably has a couple skills so that if there's for some reason I get fired from a job for, you know, because I'm white, you know, then I can so to speak switch gears. So I'm smart enough that my financial income is like solid and reliable. Those are the things that come to mind.
Okay. So, do you want a woman who's roughly your age?
Ideally, yeah. I would like someone. Yeah.
So a woman who's your age, do you want to become a father?
Do I? Yes, I do.
Ah, okay, good. And so you want a woman your age. I assume, of course, that you want a woman your age who wants to become a mother.
That's correct.
Okay. And how much time does she have to have kids if she's your age?
It's a very short window. It's about 5 years, isn't it?
I mean, she wants to start pretty quickly, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what is she looking for?
Yeah, so she's looking for... she would look for proof of an income as well as a history of job experience.
She's looking for someone who's a hard worker who can provide. Because I assume that you want her to stay home with your kids, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So your plans for dating need to include what?
A job, as well as an
getting
explanation.
An yeah, and. Will she want you to have a job for a couple of months after being unemployed for years if she's wise?
No, she would thank me for the time and find someone else.
Right. Because you're in competition with guys who have good work experience, right?
Well, not only that, but I would want her to be empirical and the empirical, you know, the empiricism of my situation is, you know, it's just a bad idea.
Right. So I'm going to ask you again, with that in mind, what are your dating plans?
Well, besides, I guess realistically, I would be looking at a woman younger than 30. No.
Well, you're looking for a wise woman.
Yes.
Does a wise woman want a guy living at granny's place, $10,000 in debt, no income, and can't apply for jobs?
Yeah, no, she doesn't.
Not even a bit, right?
Yeah, not even a bit.
And I say this with sympathy, right? I'm not trying to put you down. I'm not trying to dad you or anything like that. But I'm just trying to give you sort of the blunt truth that you are in grave danger of being unemployable and unmarriable. I'm sorry to do your anxiety thing. But
no, it's okay. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the danger, right?
No, that's a very real danger. I agree. And it's not like a danger like, oh, maybe 6 months from now. It's like, it's kind of something where it's like, I should be counting the months, maybe even the weeks.
Well, like, let's say you get a good job tomorrow and, you know, you hang on to that job and, you know, do what you need to do and all of that. So let's say you get a good job tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
How long is it going to take before a woman will trust your work ethic enough to want to settle down and have kids with you?
I think considering my history, a year.
Yeah, maybe, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe if I'm like wildly successful, let's just say maybe 9 months, but that's like, I mean, that's like everything going perfect.
Right. So that's a challenge, right?
It is, yeah. That is a challenge.
So you are looking at the now. I'm looking at the soon, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, you know, that old saying that you don't fix the hole in your roof when it's sunny because it's not raining, but you can't fix the hole in your roof when it's raining because it's too wet, right?
Oh, I've never heard of that expression, but I like it, yeah.
Yeah, or the other thing to do is that, you know, you don't plant your crops when you're hungry, right?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, for obvious reasons, right? So that's the question. What you've got a rolling future that you need to prepare for. And the rolling future is that every decision that you make right now is going to take a while, to put it mildly, to materialize.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while to materialize. Because if you try dating now, you know, a woman may say, hey, you're kind of cool, you're kind of funny, you're kind of neat, and I like you and all of that. But if she's responsible, what's she going to say about marrying you?
Well, I mean, she's going to put it nicely and honestly and say, hey, it's just not going to happen. Maybe I can refer to a friend of mine if you, you know, pull it off in a year from now. But besides that, you know, like, have a good life. You know?
Yes.
Nice knowing you.
Right. So, I mean, with regards to, you know, something like procrastination, one of the things about procrastination is we think, or we try to tell ourselves, or we believe maybe, that we have more time than we do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. I would even add to that, because I'm quite the procrastinator, the consequences. Like, it's like, oh, if I delay, yeah, they're going to be a bit upset, but it'll work out. Like, they'll be okay with it. I would add that to it as well.
Right. And you also are in a hole because you have to get out of debt, right?
Yeah.
And having to get out of debt is tough when you don't have an income or if your income prospects are quite low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
And so the important thing is to build backward from the life that you want, if that makes sense.
Build backwards.
Yeah, you build backwards from the life that you want and say, what are the steps necessary? Like, you know, let's say you want a six-pack, right? You're an exercise guy, right? You're a health guy. So let's say you want a six-pack. Well, you have to build back from what you want, which is a six-pack, and to try to figure out how you can get the six-pack. Well, you got to cut your, I don't know, I'm not a six-pack guy, right? So, but you got to do your sit-ups yeah. And you got to change your diet or whatever it is, right?
Right.
So that's the challenge.
Right. That's my challenge too.
That's your challenge, right? So just, you got to build back from the life that you want. And if you want a quality woman who's wise, which you need if you're going to have kids, right? You want to have a good mother for your kids. So you need a woman who thinks ahead, who's wise, who's sensible, and so on. And you have to build back from that. In the same way, you have to think about what your employer wants. See, hedonism is when you think about what you want in the short run, not what's best for you in the long run, right? And also, hedonism is kind of selfish because it doesn't have you generally think about what other people want, right? So you didn't have much of an idea about what a quality woman is going to want from you.
And in the same way, I don't know that you're thinking too much about what an employer is looking for, which is why it's tough to put a resume in. Because your resume stops when you're 27, right?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you haven't had much of a job, if I understand this rightly. Oh, say 28, maybe. Right? So you haven't had much of a job for the last while, right?
Right. No, no, now I understand what you mean, yeah.
So when did you quit working for your dad?
So I quit working for my father at 20, it was 27, but I did work for him last year because his job, he changed restaurant locations and it became seasonal.
Right. So let me pretend to be an employer because I've been an employer many times. I've interviewed like 1,000 people. I've hired like 100 people. So let me pretend to be an employer. And I would say, oh, tell me a little bit about your last couple of years. You would say what?
I would say, I took some time off, but last year I worked for a restaurant named blah blah blah, and they usually these kinds of conversations I prepare beforehand, and so it's like it's not coming to me.
Well, you said you were working on your resume. I assume that means also working on answering questions in interviews.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All right. I'm ready to try it again.
Okay. So I'll cut to the chase. So the challenge is that at some point an employer finds out that you've basically been working for your dad your whole life.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Now, what does an employer think of that?
They're going to assume it's
nepotism.
Just family privilege. Nepotism, yes.
Yeah. And they're also going to know that your father has not given you a job full time.
Yeah.
Now, I guess for most people, the question would be, well, if your father doesn't want to give you a full time job, why would I? Your father knows you way better than I do, and he doesn't want to hire you full-time, or you don't want to work for him. But if you don't want to work for him, why did you do it for 10 years? You know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's the latter. I've refused. Actually, my father has asked me multiple times, and it's been very difficult to refuse working with him.
Sorry, who has done that?
I have. I've been refusing my father offer me work. Actually, he gets pretty annoyed at me. It's like, it's a good job, good tips, blah, 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 and I'm like, oh, no, thank you.
Okay. So you can say, I don't like working for my father, but then the problem is you worked for him for 10 years. You can say, you know, my father is a bad employer. And then in which case, well, why did you work for him for 10 years? Like, it's just complicated because you have yet to be in the free market.
Yeah.
Because you get housing from granny and jobs from daddy.
Yeah,
while saying that family obligations are invalid.
Yeah, that's ironic. Yeah.
Well, I'm just telling you from an employer's standpoint, employment is all about hiring people. Is all about reducing risk as much as possible.
Oh, okay.
Right, because the risk is that you hire someone who turns out to be a bad worker, and then you've wasted time training them. You've wasted time teaching them. You know, all about the customers and then maybe other people you could have hired, you know, who would have been better. So hiring is all about reducing risk.
Right.
And when you go for a job, you need to look and say, how can I best reduce risk for my employer? And if your work history is daddy or dad, and it was 10 years, then what the employer or the potential employer, he knows a bunch of things from that, which I sort of already mentioned, right?
Right.
And those things are not generally something that reduces risk. If you hated working for your dad, then why did you work for him for 10 years? We assume because you couldn't get a job somewhere else. I mean, that would be, whether that's right or wrong, that's what the employer would assume.
It's a fair assumption.
Okay, so if you hated working for your dad to the point where you're looking for work in the free market, and the question is, well, why didn't you look for work in the free market before? And either your dad was overpaying you or you just found it easy and comfortable but hated it. Like, it doesn't show much strength of will, if that makes sense.
It doesn't, yeah. for in my case, my father guilted me. You know, he used my empathy. Oh, you know, son, I'm in trouble. You wouldn't call me son, but I'm in trouble. You know, this and that, and so I would go save him. In that regard, actually, I have pretty good experience dealing with like high pressure and consequential situations, like fast paced, because the restaurant we had we'd get a lot of people coming.
Well, I mean, but hang on. So I understand that. But if you hated working for your dad and you already have good experience in high pressure environments, I'm just saying from an employer standpoint, if you hated working for your dad and you've good experience in the restaurant business, why not just get a job somewhere else? You say, oh, well, you know, family obligations, it's very heavy and so on. And then, of course, the problem is, as an employer, I say, okay, so this kid's really, this fellow is very susceptible to family manipulation. So is he going to stay if his father really puts pressure on him to come back to the restaurant?
And that's why I never seeked employment, because I was concerned I would do that. And I didn't want to put myself in a situation where I had that experience, because for me, I was like, I don't want to lie to my employer. So that was why I put it off getting a job somewhere else, because I was like, I know I'm just going to cave into my father's pleas of help me, I'm in trouble right now.
Right. So and an employer, of course, will be very aware of that possibility, right? And so, because you're the employer is very aware of that possibility, he's going to be somewhat reluctant to hire you.
Yeah.
So what that means is that you have to build up a resume of work in situations where people are willing to take the risk, and that's just going to mean lower paid work.
Yeah, that's what I was. I've thought a bit of not like in that specific way, but my actions in the jobs I've been looking for, I've been looking more for the minimum wage entry level, because
well, but you haven't because you haven't applied for any of them.
Of course, I haven't applied for, but. Yeah.
Of course, the other thing that employers are going to ask themselves or ask you directly is this. Well, if you've been unemployed for years, why are you looking for work now?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I would ask. And what would you say?
I would say one of two things. Either I would be more honest and vulnerable and say, you know, I realized... This is why I left my father's restaurant. I realized my life was going the wrong direction. And I became quite aware of how dissatisfied I was. And so I took time off to sort things out. And that's why I'm with family. I'm staying with a family member of mine to ease expenses and such. And so that's, but now I have a clear enough understanding that I can be productive and helpful and useful.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, you're going to need some pretty good and clear answers to these questions, of course, right? I mean, you know that. I'm just sort of reminding you of it as a whole. That
would you say that was clear? Oh, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Well, it would be like, well, generally, most people would say, well, I'm out of money, right? And then it would be like, okay, so he doesn't really want to work. He's just out of money. So are you a high or lower risk person, if that's the case?
Thank you for that response. I can think about that, because that's a good point.
Yeah, you have to have an answer. Like, if you'd have said, "Hey, man, I really wanted to become a mime," or you know, I was hoping to break into voice acting or whatever, right? Then it would be like, okay, so kid had a dream, didn't work out. We've all been there, right? And so that's something that you could say. But if it's just like, well, you know, I don't really like working, but I just ran out of money, then the guy's going to know that you're unmotivated, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, personally, I like to work. I enjoy working. I like feeling productive.
But for me, I like the feeling of productivity, but I think I threw the baby with the bathwater with work in general, because to me, the association was, oh, I have this obligation to help my father in his restaurant. Therefore, I get paid, but it's not what I want to do.
No, but the hedonism was pleasing your father. And of course, we're all programmed to please our parents, so I'm not criticizing you for that. But you think the hedonism is about watching shows and staying up late. I would argue that the hedonism is taking the easier path, which again, I sympathize with. But the real hedonism to me is taking the easier path of pleasing your father rather than doing what's right for you in the long run. It's just easier to please your father because he's aggressive and so on. So
it'd be annoyingly precise. Would it be instead of pleasing my father, but appeasing him? Because I think...
Well, okay, sorry. Yeah, so you can say not displeasing my father. That's fine. But it's easier for you to... it's easier for you to appease your father than to say, I don't really like the restaurant business, Dad. I mean, appreciate it. I mean, I'm good for you. Like, I respect what you've done, but it's not really for me. And, you know, I gotta carve my own path, you know, just as you did, right? You came and you didn't do exactly what your father did and all of that kind of good stuff. So I'm, you know, sort of in the same mind. I gotta carve my own life, right? Or something like that, right? So, yeah. So it's easier because you get mad, right? And he'd get mad because you're a very unrisky employee, right? You're not very risky as an employee.
Yeah.
Because also, too, your family. Sorry, go ahead.
I was also going to say, you know, my father was kind of the kind of person where if he was very angry, he would. I was kind of his preferred person to take it out. So it's like there's all these other problems, like, oh, who am I going to vent to now, and things like that.
Right. And yeah, so no, I get that. Like, yeah, so you are a known quantity, and he could bully you in a way that he can't bully just some other employee, because some other employee would be like, "What are you talking about, you crazy old man? I don't want to. I'm here to work. I'm not here to get berated."
Yeah, that even happened once where one of the employees said, "Hey, you don't talk to me that way."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about. Like, I'm really sorry that your dad did that. Of course, right? I think that's just terrible. I think it's terrible.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
So yeah, I would definitely really focus as much as you can on getting a job, getting some experience, and that way you will get a higher quality woman. Because any woman who would date, like any woman who's marriage-minded and child-minded, who would date a guy who hasn't worked in years and only worked for his dad, and you know, says, and this is why I'm being sort of precise about the language. So if a woman says, "Are you looking for work?" and you say yes, and then she finds out later that just means updating your resume, browsing the web, but never applying to anything, she's going to be angry, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're misleading her, right? And
yeah,
so,
so
you have to have a good, like, you know, when I met my wife, I hadn't worked in a while, but I was writing books. So I was, you know, throwing everything into that particular dream or ideal or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, that didn't work out, but, you know, whatever, you can't tell whether these things are going to work out easily ahead of time. So yeah, that would you just got to get your ass in gear, because you're just drifting further away from the shore, and the swimming only gets harder from here.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Said. Just get a fucking job, and pay off the people, you know, start looking towards moving out. Because the other thing too, you know, if you want a quality woman, and you're living with grandma, well, she's not going to find that super impressive, right?
I would say she would find that a negative, considering that when I tell her about my childhood, you know, inevitably she's going to be like, why are you still with these people? Why haven't you left? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, I think she'd be more sympathetic than that. I mean, and it does make some kind of sense. It's just, you don't want to have to make those explanations, I think, as best as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, sir, I agree with that, the way you put it, yeah.
All right. Okay, well, it's 4:00. I really do appreciate the conversation. Thank you for your patience as I scrubbed back and forth to get what I needed, because it's all about me, remember? Please, me. So I hope you stay in touch, and I really wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Steph, and same to you. I wish the best, and you know, thank you for your time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.